Okay, we're going to call the Senate Finance back to order. Apologize for the late delay. I know it's well past 1:30, but we had a pretty busy floor scheduled today. So we're going to, on today's agenda was two things, House Bill 278, Education Funding Tax Credits, as well as Senate Bill 209, Regulation of Smoking. We'll finish up the invited testimony on education and then at least begin and start testimony on the regulation of smoking. Probably won't finish that tonight. But is there anything to come before the committee? I want to welcome Senator Kelly, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, and Vice Chair Fairclough, and myself, Senator Meyer. So we have a quorum here to conduct business, and the first item is the education funding. And we had public testimony, as you know, yesterday, I believe. The days are kind of running together. And today we're going to take invited public testimony, and we've asked Commissioner Hanley, I believe he's here. Commissioner Hanley, if you want to come on up to the table. We were going to ask Commissioner Hanley some questions on bond debt reimbursement, mill rate, and just any items that the committee members may have on the bill itself. I mentioned those two items because those are two items of interest to me. And then we'll have the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, Bruce Johnson, and we'll have the NEA Alaska President, Ron Furrer, and Association of Alaska School Boards President Norm Wooten. Yeah. Okay. So what I'd like to do is have those four folks come forward and give us a brief presentation on what they think of the bill, things that they like, don't like, and then we'll hopefully entertain some questions from committee members. So with that, Commissioner Hanley, welcome back to Senate Finance. I'll turn the floor over to you at this point in time, and then we'll get into the questions.
Thank you, Chair Meyer. With your permission, I'd like to invite Elizabeth Nittleman, who is our Director of Finance and Facilities, and she'll walk us through basically the current bond debt reimbursement program that we have, largely in regards to the 60-40 and 70-30, and we can surely both answer any questions you may have.
Great.
Thank you. For the record, Elizabeth Nudelman, Director of School Finance and Facilities for the Department of Education. And I did provide a brief list of comments and some tables for you. I didn't know if you wanted to look at that today or if you would just like me to make more summarized comments.
Why don't you just summarize comments for now?
What I'd like to share with you today is the debt reimbursement program that is part of the Department of Education. It's in statute at Alaska Statute 1411-100. And as of January 30th this year, there's approximately $1.7 billion in school construction and major maintenance debt that has been used to construct and build and repair our schools. Of that amount, the state share, based on the current reimbursable rates, is approximately $1.1 billion. And this program is funded on an annual basis through the operating budget. This year's operating budget bill has approximately $127 million for the annual funding of payments through that program. There are two rates that are reimbursable under the debt program. One is the 70% rate when a municipal school qualifies for square footage and builds within the maximum allowable square footage that is in regulation for that program. Under those conditions, the reimbursement is 70%. The second reimbursement rate is 60%, And that's for projects that do not meet the square footage calculation. And in that case, those projects are reimbursed at 60% by the state of Alaska.
Ms. Newman, if I may, excuse me, this information may be on one of these sheets, but approximately how much has been spent on the 60-40 program? And again, this is the program where we really don't have any control over. Is that correct?
Chair Meyer, the 60-40 program has more flexibility and less criteria than the 70-30 program. The statute provides criteria for both the 70 and 60 program. There's requirements for refunding of bonds. There's, for both programs, requirements that the bonds be sold over at least 10 years. For both programs, the districts must maintain their preventative maintenance program. But for the 70% program, there are further requirements, including space and designating need in other categories. The 60% program does have more flexibility to it. And in answer to your specific question, I provided a spreadsheet just of the last 3.5 years to give us an idea of the activity. And in that spreadsheet, for the last 3.5 years, $510.5 million is 70% debt, and $139,588,000 is 60% debt.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth. I was actually looking at the wrong tab, so it's dated in our three-ring binder, April 11th. So. Okay, Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, just a comment, possibly a question, but I sit on the committee that deals with construction, schools construction. We had discussions this summer. And Ms. Newman can confirm, but it wasn't a hard and fast figure, but if you recall, at one of the meetings there was a discussion, how much outstanding major maintenance is there in the state of Alaska involving our public school buildings? And there were figures thrown around, and I'm just saying these are not hard and fast figures, but upwards of $2 billion in major maintenance issues. That's a consideration to keep in mind. The other is the life of these buildings. For example, we may be embarking upon building a school out in a remote part of Alaska because of the cost, the distance, the weather, et cetera. That school may approach $60 million. How long does that school last? And I think through part of the discussions, and correct me if I'm wrong, folks that work in these school districts and are the maintenance individuals that work in the schools, the life of some of these schools is 30 years. So $60 million school, 30 years, you're depreciating, you're losing, basically you're losing your value of $2 million a year. And so that's another consideration. And then finally, at least for this segment, I know that the department, and help refresh my memory, the department implemented several years ago a kind of a major maintenance program and process and so forth. But basically, again, just through those conversations, and they weren't scientific conversations, they were just talking with folks informally that deal with these schools, there may not necessarily be a systematic method of continually upgrading and dealing with these buildings. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make is, as we head into an uncertain future, we still are going to be building schools. I know that in the district that I represent, it's a very fast-growing district, and we've been putting up a bunch of schools. But the question I think that this committee has to really ask itself and ask itself during this process this year is 70-30 something we want to continue? Do we need to revise or revisit that concept? Do we need to look at the concept of prototypical school design so that we save some money in design and engineering? I think we need to start having a discussion here soon on how do we want to view buildings? How do we want to build buildings? Where do we want to locate them? There was discussions early on about maybe there's three communities that are close to each other, and I think Senator Kelly raised this last year, there may be three communities close to each other, and it may be easy to build one school in one of the communities and connect them by short roads. These things have to be discussed because currently we are on a track that we churn out schools every year. We churn them out, but then in many respects, the legislature moves on to other business, and so don't know how long they last. We don't know if that's the right way to go about doing it. There's a number of questions, and I'm not talking rural Alaska. I'm talking fast-growing communities like the Mat-Su all over the state. The legislature has been charged through the Constitution with establishing and maintaining a public school system. And we've been flush with money the last 40 years. As we look to the future, I think we seriously need to take a look at this issue. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate what Senator Dunleavy just said. I think that the thing that I find disturbing about it is that I've heard this discussion so many times. That's certainly not a criticism of you. We've talked about this, but we haven't pulled the trigger on it. Perhaps because we don't really know how, but I would imagine Alaska Housing does, or we could, if we could get a study, if they could examine how we build schools and get a handle on this. Somebody in the construction housing industry within state government can get the answers to these questions to give us a plan to go forward, and that might be something we could actually get out of this year with, of giving them the money to go forward rather than wait till next year and then we fund it and then it's June 30th of the following year. I wonder if we could maybe slip into this bill some language. We don't have to have them here, I don't think, right away, but maybe we should talk to Alaska Housing. How do we proceed so that we can get a handle on prototypical schools and feeder communities and those kinds of things so that we can have a plan going forward?
So, Senator Dunleavy, and then I'm going to ask Commissioner Hammett if he has
just a comment to piggyback on what Senator Kelly said. Being a former superintendent and going through a major maintenance and major construction process up in Northwest Arctic, and then as school board member and president in Mat-Su with a huge bond project, once you start to really look into it, like everything we do, it's pretty complex and interrelated. For example, you have a law embedded, I think it's a 1% school art issue, where you're mandated by law to put art in the schools. There's design committees made up of community members. There's a whole system of regs and laws and processes embedded in this. And so I think doing an inventory and unraveling what the laws say, what are we compelled to do, will give us a pretty good idea going into the future what laws need to be changed or what regs need to be changed or processes need to be changed. But it's a little more complex than I think a lot of people may think.
Yeah. Commissioner Hanley, any thoughts on school construction?
Thank you for the record. My name is Mike Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. I recognize the challenge. We have over 500 buildings that are either in whole or in large part supported, funded by the state. But I think Senator Dunleavy touched on the fact that it's not an easy, it's a complex on how those schools are designed and developed for unique communities and unique parts of Alaska. It's not an easy fix, and it'll probably take some direction on how to tackle that and address all those components that are currently in statute and the way our schools are currently built. The challenge is we have a responsibility to keep those schools in place and safe and healthy places for our kids. The best way to do that is some schools we see last for 30 and 40 years, and other schools are looking to be replaced in 15 and 20, and we've got examples of that as well. I think along with this conversation is somehow a way to incentivize and provide the resources needed for maintenance. The expertise for maintenance in our communities across the state are not equal. to have that right person with the ability to fully maintain a $30 million building may not be there. So we may also want to consider how can we as a state incentivize high-quality maintenance and necessary maintenance and come along and support those programs and those efforts across the state. Those are a lot of observations without a lot of answers, but those are the things we're dealing with all the time.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. I'd just like to add to that observations with not a lot of answers either, but, you know, I agree with all the comments around the table. I thought Senator Kelly and Senator Dunleavy are both right on in their analogies, but, you know, what's it may sound like a popular statement, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway because I got the chairman give me the floor. So I think it's, you know, we shouldn't be building schools for 30 years. We should be building schools that last 50 years. And and here an anecdotal where some schools only last 15 years, you know, without knowing why it's 15 years, it may sound like a popular statement, but that's, to me, that's just unacceptable. I got around the state a lot as in the private sector and as my 10 years commissioner of labor. And I'm going to give you a school in southeast in the panhandle here that took a territorial high school and remodeled that school. It was a territorial high school. They remodeled it, and it's fully, it's a great school. You know, they went in and rejuvenated that facility, and instead of spending $40 or $50 million building a new school, $11-12 million, and remodel that high school, and then it maybe it's good for another 20 or 30 years. So I know that I didn't bring any answers to the equation, but to me, 30 years is just unacceptable for building the kind of money that we put in these schools. They need to last more than 30 years.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, one of the ways to have the kids take care of the school and the parents is to have local hire. You know, when you have your parents working on the school, the parents tell the kids, you know, I worked on that school, this is our school, and they take care of it much better. You know, I'm fortunate to be chairman of the board of Bethel Native Corporation. We built schools in different areas of the state, and we build other projects, and our motto has been to try to have at least 50% local hire. I know we have a constitution that says the, you know, Alaska hire is something that can't be included in contracts, but to have some incentives in place so that when you build schools, there's an incentive to have local hire, I think will go a long way to giving the community pride in the school when the kids that go to the school, the parents worked on those schools, and all in all, I think the schools are better maintained and require less maintenance.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Just to dovetail on Senator Hoffman's comments, if, you know, we got a provision in Title 36 at the Department of Labor, if it's 100% state funding, we can, you know, we can encourage a 90% local hire out there, and I agree with Senator Hoffman's comments.
Okay. Commissioner, I have a, Senator Fairclough, you have a comment?
Mr. Co-Chairman, I see you presenting us with two different issues. One is the issue of the 70-30 and the 60-40, which is actually encouraging debt in the larger communities because they believe when they go to the poll, or at least local communities sell it, that the state is picking up 70% of the cost. So they sell it to the general public as 30 cents on the dollar, and so the projects are, they may be larger than normal, and so I hear that a conversation should be had about, do we want to encourage debt at this time in our life, and should we continue to encourage debt to refurbish some of the communities that have the ability to tax themselves. And if we don't allow them to do that or we change it, then there could be more application, at least, for the state grant proposal that has been blocked by the Kasaili case education or bottleneck because we had so much need in rural Alaska. So, Mr. Chairman, things are changing right now in Alaska, and we are in transition, and we're considering a huge draw from savings to try to tide us over. And I don't think that local communities should be encouraged to take on more debt. In fact, I would encourage us to consider buying down that debt and getting out of some of this responsibility so that we can open up some room in local budgets to do whatever they believe is best, but not encourage them to go out and acquire more debt. And the 70% loan, 70-30 as well as the 60-40 in my community is encouraging voters to say yes to bonds that they have 30 cents on the dollar that the property taxes are paying for. And I'm not saying I wouldn't pay more as a property taxpayer, but I think that there's a different look if you're actually paying every dollar for that construction or not. And it would be challenging for school districts to have to bring before the voters dollar for dollar payment. But again, 70-30, I believe, is encouraging debt. And then the second issue, Mr. Chairman, is a conversation about what those schools that we finance should look like. And I've said it before, and I hope that there's support around this table, but specifically in rural communities, when we're looking at schools, they are actually community centers. And so when we look at the education criteria and the specifications that are currently out there, we fail to recognize that these might be emergency shelters, food distribution centers, the only library in a community. And so I agree with the prototype approach, but there needs to be some dialogue with the square footage allotments for those schools. It would be nice in the perfect world to have your have a separate door in two doors into your building, one for your health aide nurse, so that you could share resources with the health aide and people could come privately in to see the health aide. But on the other side of that partition is your school nurse or someone that is there, and so that you co-locate your resources because those are specific supplies that you might need. So there's ways. We should also be working with Cold Climate Research to put in, you know, the appropriate weatherization on some of these facilities and sites to do that. So I see that as a long-term conversation, the latter, but I think that the debt reimbursement is certainly a finance piece that we should say yay or nay to. Maybe we leave it alone, maybe we reduce it, but it certainly should be talked about.
So, Commissioner, let me ask you a question. I know at one point in time, we talked about the 70-30, 60-40, and in some ways you kind of like the 70-30 because you have to agree to that debt before they take it on. And you said it's been a useful tool in getting some school maintenance done. Whereas maybe the 60-40, you have a little less control. It's a little more flexible for the local municipalities, and it may not necessarily be doing the things you'd like to see with that money. So can you share with the committee your thoughts on the I guess my question is, if would you rather see it, knowing, you know, that we don't have unlimited money anymore, would you rather see it be a 50-50 or a 40-60 and 60-40? What are your thoughts?
Thank you, Chair Meyer. On page 2 of the packet that we gave you, the second bullet point speaks to that 70%, and this will directly address the conversations that we've had. When you hit the 70%, or you're requesting 70% reimbursement, the municipality needs to demonstrate need. And there are four components that they need to address. One of those components to address need and fit within the space requirements. Those aren't there as a part of the 60%. So there is more flexibility and less oversight, if you will, less accountability for that space. So we definitely, I can't, it's difficult for me to speak to, I can speak fiscally to the point of 70%. It's difficult for me to speak extensively, and Elizabeth may be able to speak more so, to how that impacts and the value that is to communities and their ability to continue to maintain their schools. But when we do see the 60%, the state still has significant buy-in, and yet really no say. They typically are outside of the square footage requirements, and they have not demonstrated need. With that said, I would just simply also want to provide the caveat that if you looked on the blue sheet, blue and white sheet, which is simply the list of projects, just because they haven't had to identify need does not mean, and you can just simply look down that second column there at the 60% projects, does not mean that those are not good projects. It just means that they have not met the criteria, they've not needed to, there's a lot of flexibility there. So I don't want to simply say that they're not needed. But they haven't had to meet any kind of criteria to get that kind of reimbursement. At a high level, summary level conversation, I would be much more comfortable with reducing the amount in the 60-40 than the 70-30, simply because there's no identification of need there. If we were to reduce that, it seems to be more palatable on my part. Again, this is without going in deeply into these projects, than to reduce the 70-30. But at a state level, I think a conversation around all of that, how much are we incentivizing? If, I think one question to be asked, if we were to reduce the 70% or the 60%, what would be the impact of that? Well, there's obviously, we could fiscally just look at the numbers here and say, if we had reimbursed this at a lower rate, what would it be? How much would we have saved? But the impact would probably also include two things. One is you may have projects, if it's reduced significantly, projects that don't come forward anymore. But also you may find more efficiencies in design. So you may have an efficiency in a school district that says, well, if we're only getting 65% instead of 70% or 60%, maybe we shouldn't add some of these extra features. I'm not saying cut down on quality, but we may have a more modest design without the other prototypical models in place. So those are two things that we may see as that conversation goes forward. Fewer coming forward because they can't be afforded, or more modest requests because more responsibility is falling to the local municipalities.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. More. Do we need more discussion on this, or do you want to go on to the next topic? Senator Faircloth?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Could either one of you tell me when the applications are received and how we commit? So if we were looking to make a change to either the 70-30 program or the 60-40, when would you implement that for a date so that folks who might already be out there, I know Anchorage just had a bond package, and there's some asterisks on page 5 of 9 that talk about not including those projects in here, but they have been qualified already by the department. So when is an ideal time if you were making a change? What would the effective date be?
Through the chair, again, Elizabeth Noodleman, Senator Faircloth. Applications can be received throughout the year for the debt program. I would need to look at the structure of the statute, but if there was any changes, I think that just the wording and the structure of the statute would need to be designed to capture the rest of the outstanding projects that had been approved or were in the pipeline. And if a change was made, it would simply identify the timelines for implementation.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, what I'm afraid of is just discussing it, because I've seen it happen in Anchorage before. Then they've had in the past at least a special election to put bonds on the ballot in the November election so that they would have one more bite at the apple. So if we're going to make a change, there has to be an effective date so that we don't see a rush of everyone trying to get to a 2014 ballot, or maybe we want to okay that rush and let that happen, but knowing that it would increase our annual debt payment. Again, the commissioner told us $127 million of annual debt payments from the state to support the $1.1 billion worth of debt that we're carrying at a local level on local books. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, what I would like you to also consider is 2015 is the year that we'll start analyzing the debt that should go on the balance books of all of the cities across the state, and school districts are part of the part of that financial picture. And some, I would tell you specifically for Anchorage, if you look at our enterprise funds, when that debt allocation goes into effect, out of our control, one of our fiscal houses per se will go upside down. That the debt that they owe in the PERS TERS calculation will be greater than the assets that they have, and so that's definitely going to affect the leverage of their ability to bond. And so that's why I had suggested previously that we might want to take a look at trying to buy down some of this local debt so that when that allocation starts to spread, that our communities aren't held and that their credit rating is somehow diminished significantly.
And if I could follow up on that, do we put limits or a cap on a municipality or a school district or even on a specific project?
Chair Meyer, there are no limits or caps in the current statute for the current implementation of the debt program. In the last 25 years, sometimes there were limits or caps on the program. Related to specific projects, those cost estimates are done at the municipal or school district level, and they're forwarded to the department for review. So the costs are generated based on professional estimates. Typically, we would see a large community like Anchorage, the Anchorage School District, they manage their debt at a level that they believe they want to keep it at. So they have projects, and as they drop off, they will bring on new projects. So I think for your larger school districts and your larger municipalities, they're managing their levels of debt, but currently there's nothing in the statute that limits that at the state level.
Okay, thank you. All right, additional questions, Senator Dunleavy?
Just a brief comment.
Okay.
The first one is for Senator Bishop. There was a building built in Constantinople in 537, the Santa Sophia. It's still being used today. So that wasn't viewed as a consumable back then. But when you have a building that deteriorates in 20 years, oftentimes it's considered a consumable structure. In other words, it's not looked at as an investment. Just to build off on some of the things folks said, and I'll wrap it up here pretty quick, this is an opportunity for us to reinvent how we look out going into the future. I think there's some real opportunity here for some public-private partnerships in buildings. I know that there are folks coming to us from the charter school world that would like for us to give them funds for buildings, but this may be an opportunity to start to change the paradigm. We may come up with funds for rent offset or lease offset. I think this is an opportunity to do a number of things. It's not going to be done in 1 year, but at least the intent, or at least doing some studies, will get us potentially pivoting in a different direction that will save the state a lot of money, but still be able to ensure that we have adequate buildings for kids in the future.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Okay, Elizabeth. I think I might have interrupted your presentation. So did you have more you want to talk about, or do you want to go to the next item of interest?
Well, Chair Meyer, I had simply put together some notes, but I think we covered a lot of those in our discussion. So I will make a couple more comments. I would just point out that under the 70% debt reimbursement program, many of those projects are major maintenance projects to preserve and make the buildings last longer. So many of those projects are roofs and other system repairs. So I would just really want to point out that major maintenance projects for items such as roofs are part of the debt reimbursement program. And then, again, I think in the information that was provided, I shared with you the total debt, the state share of that debt, and then the annual cost each year that runs through the operating budget and goes out to the school districts. And then I did share on the last page of the information I provided a breakout by school district. And I just wanted to bring you some information so you could have a discussion and answer any more questions.
Okay, great. Well, I do have a question on the mill levy, mill rates. If the committee's ready to go on to the next topic, I'd like for you to address that so we understand that a little bit better. I know we made a change to that a couple years ago. One of the things we've been hearing in the public testimony is to give the local communities more flexibility, and I believe that would do that. And you heard my frustration that we took this away from the local community, and we didn't get any thanks or pats on the back for it. Not that we need that or should get that, but yet at the same time we're also getting criticized for not funding more, even though we've been picking up a lot of the responsibility from the municipalities, whether it be school construction, PERS, TERS, or the change in the mill rate, so that more of the funding comes to us. So can you explain that process a little bit for us, Ms. Newman?
Sure, Chair Meyer. The mill rate years ago was set at a local minimum requirement that school districts would contribute 4 mills of the assessed value for their community as a minimum local effort to the school district. Some time ago, 10 to 12 years ago, there was a change to statute which provided that as assessed values increased, the required contribution would be half of the increase in assessed value. So over time, as communities grew, and they grew at different rates, the mill rates for the required local contribution across Alaska started to decrease from the 4 mills down to 2.65 at the lowest contribution level, and then various levels across the state. There was 3.2, there was 2.9, and so the required local effort coming from the municipalities was smaller than it had been 15 years ago. Smaller in percentage, or smaller in mill rate, not smaller in actual dollars, because this was 20 years later. A couple years ago, there was legislation that looked at the mill rates, looked at the differing mill rates across the state, looked at the lowest mill rate, 2.65, and set the mill rate for the foundation program for the minimum required local effort at 2.65 for all districts, except for 3 that have a different convention because of their tax base. Set the mill rate at 2.65 and eliminated the statutory language that was allowing for a 50% reduction as the assessments grew. So what we have from that statute 2 years ago is all of the mill rates were set at the same 2.65 level. And in order to do that, the state picked up the share to bring each community to 2.65. So the municipal districts across the state, some of them, that was a $1 million cost to the state. In total, to bring all of the mill rates to 2.65, it was a $20 million cost. When that piece of legislation became law.
So, if I can follow up on that, so if we went back to the old method, that would be $20 million savings to the state that theoretically could put in the BSA and be a $100 per child increase, theoretically.
If you went back to the rates of 2 years ago, it would be $20 million. If you went back to the rate of 20 years ago, the 4-mil rate, before the rate started dropping, it would be much, much more than that.
Right.
But yes.
Yeah, we're not going to go that far back. But 2 years ago, what was it set at, 2.9?
The average was approximately 2.9.
Okay. And you said the savings to the communities, depending on the community, was in the millions, apparently. Like, I'm thinking Anchorage was probably $7 million. Does that sound right, if the total was 20? Maybe even more than 7. Okay. Okay. Any other questions on the mill rates? I guess we have them here. Okay. Those were my questions, certainly open to the committee. Actually, Commissioner Tu, I'd like to get your thoughts on the bill itself, areas of concern, or maybe areas you'd like to see adjustments.
Thank you, Chair Meyer. There are a couple of things of particular focus, and I believe I've mentioned them at least in context of the whole bill, that I know the governor would like to see included, and they were originally included. They were removed at the House on the House side. One part of that is the removal of the boarding the residential school stipends. There was a suggested increase to recognize and at least cover the recognized true costs of those residential schools. It's the same number that was before this legislature last year, the same number that is currently in SB, I believe, 113, Senator Coghill's bill, to recognize those costs. So that was removed. We would surely like to see that supported. Those are great programs for us around the state. There was another component that we have a size factor for charter schools and a limit. When they drop below 150, in essence, the funding drops slightly to 95%. And by making a shift in that 150, especially for small communities that have charter schools, by dropping that to 75, it allows them to remain at the full funding level, at the 150 level, and makes it more feasible for small communities to have smaller charter schools. We'd like to see that added back in. The third component is that the inclusion of the SAT-ACT was simply to allow students a choice. Right now they're required to take the work keys, which gives them a score towards a career, but allow them the opportunity to choose the tool that they feel is best, to either go with work keys or choose a tool that would give them a score that would, one, qualify them for the performance scholarship, but also be a score that they could use to get into a college of their choice.
So that would go along with eliminating the high school exit exam.
Thank you very much. And yes, we would love to see that also included back in, but the bottom line is we would really like to see the repeal of the HSGQE. Ideally, it would be a part of this bill, but ultimately we'd like to see that repealed, and it would go along with that. Yeah. The repeal of the HSGQE would be a decrement of $2.7 million. It would surely more than cover the cost of the small amount, about a $500,000 increment for the SAT-ACT.
Okay, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you give a brief description of the provisions that were eliminated from the bill in the House as to why they eliminated them? Did they give justification?
The components that I just referenced. Through the chair, those two components were removed as a CS, so they weren't amendments in committee, so we didn't get the chance to see directly those impacts. Conversations I've had were around just fiscal components.
Okay. Senator Olson, question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was pointed out by Mrs. Nodelman, and I'm not sure who's to answer the question, but in order to enhance the longevity of some of the school structures out there, you talked about maintenance that's there. And one of the things that's concerning me is that the governor didn't put any money into major maintenance at all. And I'm assuming those recommendations came from your department, Commissioner. So I'm wondering why is there seemed to be a lapse in funding of something that's so necessary in order to enhance the longevity of these structures?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the conversation was one that we had with the governor back and forth, and we have the list currently there, and the opportunities to move down that list and just where that would be. I believe it was the intent of the governor to put forward something that was relatively fiscally responsible, put forward areas that we could improve on and move forward on, and in hopes that the legislature would weigh in as well on the maintenance.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. The fiscal responsibility seems to be somewhat lacking if you're not maintaining the buildings that you have. So I would say that's a poor characterization of not putting anything into there. Do you not agree? You don't have to answer the question or not. I'm just saying that sort of, from our standpoint, from somebody from the outside, it just seems like something that was voiced by somebody so important by the person to your right that all of a sudden there's nothing there. It seems to be an empty... an empty type of statement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
On that point, you know, I would agree with Senator Olson. It seems as though it was a selective enforcement or selective decision making when you see deferred maintenance in the budget for universities, for other facilities throughout the state of Alaska, and the only area that did not receive a major component was schools. In the year that we were thinking that we were the education year.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, back to the high school qualifying exam for a second.
Go ahead.
I think it was a day or two ago that former Senator Con Bundy had testified. He was instrumental in putting together the high school qualifying exam. Questions for the commissioner. Was it the intent to eliminate, when we say the high school qualifying exam, was the intent to eliminate the concept of a high-stakes exam that would be part of the diploma-granting process, or was it the idea that you eliminate the high school qualifying exam test as it was outdated due to a change in standards? What was the thought?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, it was both. We have, when the current HSGQA was put in place, it was the one place, it was the one dipstick we had to measure our students' progress. It was prior to our current SBAs, and it was one way to say, how are our kids doing, how are we doing, are they being prepared? Since then, we've had our education system evolve around the HSGQE, which has remained at about an 8th, 9th, and 10th grade level, depending on the subject area. And we now have other measures that we can check on the status and the proficiency of our students through our assessments. We've upped our standards. Most of our school districts are using formative assessments to guide their instruction along the way. And we've recognized that, and I heard former senator speak to this. He said, we put this in place because of the high needs of remediation. And if we take it away, we don't want to go back to that. I would say that with the system we have developed now and most recently with new standards and things, the HSGQE doesn't seem to be the variable that changed anything because we still have those remediation needs. It doesn't seem to be the variable that moved us forward. And it surely isn't an indication of success towards graduation. It's not an indication of success at the next stages in life. And so what we're simply hearing from our districts around the state is that how much testing do we need to do? How many times do we have to continually assess our students? This is one that we really feel like whose time has come, and it's not doing what it was originally intended, what it originally did for us, and it's one that we can remove from our books.
Go ahead.
Commissioner, how will you know when a student is walking on the stage and as a senior that they are prepared to leave the system?
We rely heavily, as we do now under the current current program with the HSGQE, we rely on our school districts to say, you have adequately met the requirements of graduation, you have passed these courses, you have met the requirements of these courses with the right grades and the right levels of proficiency. The HSGQE hasn't been necessarily the tool that has said you're ready. You could pass the HSGQE and not meet the credit requirements. So we rely heavily on our districts to do that.
Go ahead.
Was the high school qualifying exam put into place as a result of any federal issues, NCLB? Was it required to have a high-stakes test to be receiving the funds and be compliant under NCLB?
Through the chair, no. There are only, I'm going to estimate, it's 23 or 25 states that have a high-stakes exit exam. We're one of them. So half the states don't even have one.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Okay, additional questions for the commissioner or Ms. Nittleman? Okay, if not, thank you very much for joining us today. Okay, let's go on now then to the, is it Bruce Johnson? Yeah, with the Council of School Administrators. Yeah, brief at ease. Okay, Senate Finance is back. With us now is Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for Alaska Council of School Administrators. Bruce, if you would give us your comments on the bill, which parts you like, which parts you don't like, kind of in general. We don't get into a whole lot of detail. And then we'll take some specific questions from committee members. So the floor is yours.
Very good. And thank you, Chairman Meyer and members of the committee. I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. And starting off here, we just want I want to be sure that you know that superintendents, principals, and business officials who fall under the umbrella of the Alaska Council of School Administrators appreciate the time and energy that you're putting into education. It is sincerely appreciated. I'll talk briefly about four components of HB 278, the first one being course credit. Our members are supportive of the course credit mastery. We don't want them sitting in class board, those sorts of things. It would be helpful if we would limit it to those subject areas that are more easily assessed, competency assessed, by conventional exams, and those areas are math, English, science, social studies, and world languages. You can imagine once you get beyond the kinds of exams that are available for those or could be created by the district, there's a lot of subjectivity that comes into some of the other areas. It would be difficult to do across the state and with any degree of fairness, equity, and certainly even within districts it would be difficult to ensure equitable treatment for all students. Again, though, we support the concept. We believe that this makes good sense for Alaska and will help many of our students move forward more quickly in their education and move beyond even high school credit into the dual credit and things of that nature. So not a big issue with us, but starting out here, it's going to be demanding for districts. The school and district designations, we prefer as a group that the current star rating system is just being tried out, is in its infancy. It's been well received. I think it sends a strong message if you're a one-star school that it's urgent that you get on board and improve. And yet, in the minds of our members, it does not seem quite so draconian as having the letter F failing and whatever other interpretation you put with that. But it certainly should never allow us to stop doing our very best for every child and step it up where we are not making a good continuous progress. But this is about continuous progress. That's the star rating system, and we endorse that. Teacher tenure. Our membership coming through this process from the other body has been split on this issue. In part, it was reconciled by the other body as they considered school municipalities, first class cities, and REAs under 5,500 population to be able to grant tenure in 3 years, and the other districts would then move to five. The rationale in listening to administrators on that is one of recruitment. We have others in our membership that would say when you're a beginning teacher, you're not overly concerned about tenure, you're not overly concerned about retirement, any of those, you just want a job and you want to get on with it, and those are the people that get hired. But at the same time, we also hear from key districts with large populations that having a little extra time with tenure would be very helpful, particularly in the hard-to-fill positions or when unique circumstances crop up, life circumstances in the third year of a teacher's employment, tenure's on the line. They may have had a bad year through no fault of their own because of distractions, family or otherwise. And one of the concepts that's been kicked around a little bit by our membership, and it's not my role to recommend, but rather just put on the table for consideration, would it be possible that tenure cannot be granted until after the third year? So that takes care of our districts that are involved in municipalities and first-class cities under 5,500, but then the other districts could grant tenure in the third year, after the third year, after the fourth year, after the fifth year, depending upon who that individual is, how they're coming along in their growth. There can be a situation where you're working with them, they're showing a lot of growth, but I think conventional wisdom now is that you would terminate, non-retain that person at the end of the 3 year, but you might love to have that fourth year with that individual to see if they really can blossom, particularly in a hard-to-fill role like special education. This situation is facing one of our large school districts right now where they're non-retaining two special ed teachers because they're in that situation, that they would like to give them more time, but to do that grants them tenure, and then they've got a big battle on their hands if it doesn't work out as they hoped. So that's a possibility, one that I think could work in Alaska and is certainly one that some of our members have considered. The last area that I'd like to address before questions has to do with funding, and we certainly appreciate where we're at in the funding discussion for public education in both bodies. We appreciate that hard work. Please know that our members are very cognizant about our fiscal future in Alaska. We present that. I just presented it yesterday to a group of individuals that, you know, things are going to change, and it's very, very important that we use whatever funds come our way in the most advantageous way possible to improve the education for all kids and ensure that all kids are ready to take that next step in life. Obviously, as a membership, we like the money in the base student allocation, and those reasons are very obvious to you. We also appreciate that when money in recent times has been given to us outside the formula, those funds and the practice has been to honor the unique circumstances of each district and put those funds through the formula as they're awarded to school districts. Many of you are aware that we demonstrated our commitment as school districts in looking at potential cost savings with the insurance health pool. And we got 100% of our districts to participate. And I think that you can count on us moving forward to do the same with any of those issues that you feel would potentially assist the state and school district with cost-saving measures, exploring new approaches. We will be open to that. We'll be open to turning over rocks and see whether there's a good direction for us. And so we won't be an organization saying no. We'll work with you and explore those possibilities because we do recognize that fiscal situation. And lastly, before I take questions, if there are any, is that we, again, sincerely appreciate your concern, this group's work over the summer and fall to help understand public education and where we're at and our needs. It hasn't gone unnoticed. Thank you. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, through the chair. Please just, I may have missed it, where is the organization on teacher tenure?
So they agree with the 3 years in rural smaller districts. The preponderance of those districts felt that that was necessary as a tool in their tool chest to attract individuals to their district. They also, there's some, it's competitive when you're looking for people, same jobs fair, you have Anchorage alongside of ADAC, you know, they're recruiting teachers, and they believe that that would be helpful to them if there was tenure more, potential of tenure more quickly. So, on the other hand, with our larger districts, they very much like a longer period of time, although that's not all of those larger districts, but many of them feel that that would be a helpful tool in some situations.
And, through the chair?
Sure.
They would support a statewide salary study as well as a health care study?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. Again, I think we stand ready to explore any of those possibilities. And you've indicated as a committee, I think on numerous occasions, that if there isn't cost savings and it isn't a good idea, we're not going to move forward vigorously and implement it. You know, we'll look at it differently or look at another total approach. And I think we've seen that in what you've done this past year.
Thank you. Can I make just a brief comment, through the chair? Just very brief.
Yeah.
Dr. Johnson's going to be retiring in about 7 days. He's been an educator in the state of Alaska for many, many, many years. He was superintendent of Kodiak, superintendent of Juneau, and deputy commissioner of education. And he is, my understanding, he's going off to Kodiak to a remote part of the island. and will be doing his dream of hunting and being away from things for a while. So I just want to thank him for his years of service. Put that on the record.
All right.
Thank you very much for your service, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Hunting, whatever you're hunting in Kodiak.
Bear this spring.
Bear, okay. They got buffalo out there, too, I noticed.
There are. There yeah. are, exactly.
Okay, additional questions for Dr. Johnson before he leaves and retires and goes hunting? Okay. I don't see any right now. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll have Ron Furrer. With the NEA, and then also we do have SUNY Hiltz online, so I don't know if SUNY's going to make the presentation or you, Norm, but we'll figure that out. Okay. Ron, welcome to Senate Finance, same question that I posed to Dr. Johnson. We'd like to get your thoughts on the bill, maybe certain things that you like, don't like, and then take questions from the committee.
Yes, for the record, my name is Ron Furrer, NEA Alaska President. I represent 13,000 education support professionals and teachers. Yesterday I did provide testimony, and I believe you have, I at least provided it to the committee. So I really don't have extra comments. I am fully prepared to answer questions.
Okay, excellent, Ron. Yeah, I think that's Senator Fairclough had several questions for you, and rather than holding up the public testimony, we invited you back to the committee. So, Senator Fairclough, why don't we go?
I did have one other thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
And hopefully, you got a copy of a document that we tried to put together to help in the discussion, since it seemed to be. Dealing with teacher termination. So,
okay, yeah, excellent. I think we do have that here. Okay, Senator Fairclough, did you want to start out with some questions for Mr. Furrer?
Mr. Chairman, some of it's in writing, so I don't know if Ryan would like to put it on the record as far as NEA's position on tenure. He went really fast through the sections, and so. He said on section 23, it was a no. On 30 to 41, he started mentioning something about constitutionality. On section 44, he said no to the statewide salary survey. And that's about all I could capture. So I personally don't have those comments yet that I've reviewed. And so if there are things that you don't like in the bill, if you could put it on the record in some specificity, that would be helpful.
Yes.
And propose an option. For fixing the problem that's trying to be addressed?
Yes, through the chair. The tenure bill, we believe, is not broken. I know that there's a concept that at the end of 3 years, the teacher is either given tenure or dismissed. And that is not correct. I have worked with several different teachers when I was on the chair of teacher rights. And at the end of 3 years, when the teacher was going to be determined did not meet the criteria as outlined in state law, didn't meet or exceed all the standards, they were put on a plan of improvement and had another year to show that they could perform. And so I know a number of teachers in the Anchorage School District that have gone 4 years before they achieved tenure. The other piece about tenure is, when we're recruiting teachers, if our tenure laws are one of the three highest in the nation, it's going to be very difficult to get a teacher to consider Alaska as their career. 33 states have tenure laws of 3 years. Only two other states have tenure laws of higher than 3 years. So that's one of the concerns that we have about recruiting. And the other piece, if 5 years were put in place, we have a defined contribution plan, which is yet another disincentive for teachers to consider coming to Alaska. And we have some statistics from the Arm Board
get my glasses out.
That since July 2006, Alaska hired 3,037 teachers. However, by June 12th, 2012, only 632 of those teachers had stayed in Alaska for more than 5 years. It's about a 20% retention rate. Of the 12,297 PERS employees hired in the same period, only 989 stayed for 5 years or more. That's about an 8% retention rate. In the last 2 years, defined contribution employees, both PERS and TERS, who have left public employment have withdrawn almost $33 million from the system, much of which has left the state. According to the rules of a defined contribution, at the end of 5 years, public employees as well as teachers can take 100% of what they contributed to the DC plan and 100% of what the employer, school district, or the state has contributed. So it's kind of an emerging of disincentives. You have 5 years, you can take 100% of what is in your DC plan. If at the end of 5 years you don't have tenure, then there's a real big incentive for you to say, thank you, Alaska, enjoy the experience, I'll take my DC and I'll go to another state. And we certainly don't want to see Alaska become a training ground. What we believe is that we've got career teachers, and we love to continue to attract the best and brightest and be able to retain them. So that's the primary reason that we are concerned about a five-year tenure, moving to five-year tenure for teachers.
Senator Clough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate those comments. On Section 30 through 41, your testimony that was just passed out says, while we support investment in education, there have been some who question the constitutionality of expanding tax credits to K through 12 for public or private nonprofit agencies or schools. I don't know if you wanted to expand your thoughts on that.
Well, I know that earlier in this session and the previous session or of the 20th legislature, there has been concerns regarding public monies and private institutions. And we also wonder if for-profit companies were getting a tax credit for monies that went to private institutions or K-12. We have concerns that that might not meet constitutional muster.
If I can add on that, I think, if I recall, and maybe somebody on the committee knows, don't we allow tax credits currently for VOTEC in K through 12? Or maybe it's just high school. I believe it's just high school.
Post-secondary,
but it's already in the K through 12 system at the high school level, I believe. Senator Dunleavy, do you know?
Through the chair, that's correct, and the governor is adding some more additional recipients of those tax credits in his bill to expand that. We basically do tax credits for just about everything.
Okay. Very good. And if Senator Fairclough, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back to the tenure question. Are there any states that don't have that have zero tenure? In other words, you never achieve tenure?
The information I have before me from Ed Week does not show. Oh, there is one with no policy. I believe that's Washington, D.C.
And you said 33, at least 33 had 3 years?
Yes.
Okay. So the rest of them then are, all over the board?
Well, the information we have is that there are two states that have 1 year. There are eight states that have 2 years. There are 32 states that have 3 years. Five states that have 4 years. Two states that have 5 years. No states that have 6 years, and one state has 7 years.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would it be possible, Ron, to provide that to the committee?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, that'd be very helpful. think there is some misinformation going on that one. Senator Faircloth, did you have additional questions?
No, I was trying to add up if we came up with 50 states. Mr. Chairman, the last section that there wasn't very much time to talk about was the statewide salary and benefits. And Ron spoke in opposition to researching a statewide salary and benefits survey. And so I'm wondering what he might think from the group that he represents and how we solve the issue of maintaining local control, but coming to the state and the state not really being able to pay the bill. How do we fix it?
Well, as I, in my testimony yesterday, said, what we look at is what are the policies that are in play? Are they going to improve student achievement? The tenure piece, I've had principals tell me, and I know other teachers and myself included, that in terms of tenure, we know a bad teacher. And principals have told me that it doesn't take them 3 years to identify a bad teacher. And the concern, one of the other concerns, is if we've got someone that's not proficient by 3 years, we're going to give them another 2 years? That's a concern because, again, we're focused on student achievement. And if we have a teacher that's not proficient, we want the best teachers for our students because we want our students to succeed at the level that they can. And if they have someone that's not proficient, we'd like to get somebody else in there. Now, as far as the statewide salary survey, my testimony was I believe the $600,000 plus would be more useful in looking at the foundation formula. Because salary, and the testifier just before me talked about competitiveness between districts. If there is a statewide salary, I'm guessing that it wouldn't be the same in all areas because if you had the same amount salary for Anchorage versus Bethel or other rural locations, most folks would be putting in their applications for the urban area versus the rural. So the other part of that is that, again, we're focused on student achievement, and focusing and spending money on looking at a salary schedule is not going to help students achieve, I don't believe.
Go ahead, Senator Ferk.
Mr. Chairman, that wasn't the question. We'd all like to have students achieve. The issue is, how does the state control the budgets and maintain local control when we don't have the revenue to do it? If you're of the philosophy that this is as good as it gets, which I'm not, I believe there's a bright future out there, and absolutely think that we just need to hold right now and try to use our dollars the best we can. We're reaching into savings because we believe that Alaska has a future. At least that's why I'm going to vote to reach into savings to continue us down the path. But the issue is that I think I've heard someone say it, and they can attest to it if they'd like to. But, you know, if I give my son or daughter a credit card and they go out and we let them spend whatever they want, and then they come back, maybe they're away at college, and they come back and they say, hey, Mom, Dad, you know, pay off the credit card. You know, I tried to buy my latest whatever, and, you know, the credit limit had been hit. Can you pay it off so I can spend some more? We're not managing, as a finance committee or two finance committees in the state of Alaska, we really don't have a way to manage what's happening on the spending side. So I was looking to see if you had a way that we could manage together. And one of the ideas apparently coming from the House is if we set a salary schedule, at least we would know what was coming at us and people would know what to expect. Not to say how it was set or, you know, what it would look like being set, but apparently it's a way that someone is considering at managing the expenses that we have when it comes to labor, which is 85-90% of what we're investing in schools. So I'm looking for a way that the state can manage and make sure that we have successful schools.
And I don't know, I have been told that, in comparison between settlements that have been negotiated at the local level on school districts, in comparison to settlements that state workers have settled for at the state level and bargaining with the state, that the school districts have actually achieved, if you will, smaller increases than at the state level. But again, I'm not, that's what I've been told. I don't have that information. Factually.
Well, I'll say this with a smile. Then that would mean that your group should advocate for letting the state set the scale if they argue better with us than they do with individual districts. Your membership would benefit greater, right?
I guess with that thought, yeah.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron, thanks for your comments. Are there any other states, not that I really care, but I care about Alaska, but just since we're having the discussion, are there any other states that have one say NEA negotiates one CBA with a state?
I believe Hawaii is the only state that has a statewide salary schedule.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, just to clarify, the reason for that is there's only one school district in Hawaii. It's a statewide school district is what it is, but yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Any other questions for Ron? Go ahead.
Just a quick comment. First of all, Ron, I want to thank you for the information, seriously. Your testimony, sometimes the organization you represent, myself, we haven't always been on the same side of things.
That's your name.
It is. But I do want to thank you for the clear positions on these issues and the additional information. Just a quick comment, one of the things I think that Senator Fairclough was driving at was that Alaska is a very unique state when it comes to funding education. Lower 48, as you know, it's a lot of county school districts, and they have the power to tax divorced of the city or the oftentimes the county government itself. They have the power to tax, and they have the power to bond for both operations and capital. So those are truly, truly, in a historical sense, local control districts, because you elect a board. The board is responsible to the people for the fiscal issues and what they're putting on bonds and what they're spending. But here in Alaska, currently, and I think you are correct, I think the recent negotiated salary increases have been small. But there's not necessarily any controls on that. In other words, if there was a school district that was not necessarily a borough school district, but an REAA that negotiated a 5% raise and then found themselves in a little bit of trouble, they would have to come to the state. The Copper River issue many, many years ago where they tried to file bankruptcy, that actually didn't work doing that. And so, although recently those increases have been small, I think the concern among some of us is how do we help control costs so that we have enough money and enough funding to continue to provide education for our kids throughout the state. So that's where that's coming from.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. Any comments on that, Ron?
Oh, I was kind of hoping that somebody would ask me what the one thing was that would improve student achievement, but it didn't happen.
Go ahead.
Attendance. I'm very concerned. As a group, we're very concerned about attendance. You know, we have a compulsory school attendance law that says you must go to school until you're sophomore, 16. That's very frustrating. So, thank you for asking.
I'm going to go to Senator Bishop and then back to Senator Dunleavy. Senator Bishop.
Before we get, I could spend a whole day talking to you about student achievement, but 1 second, while we're on teacher tenure and salaries and schedules, since everybody's in the room, it's not a pet peeve, but I got something I would like all of us to work better towards. And this, if we're talking about tenure and we're looking at going 3 or 5 or we're talking about keeping teachers in Alaska, and don't take this personal, anybody, but it troubles me when an Alaskan born individual goes to school, goes to the university to be a teacher in this state,
applies for a job and can't get the job, can't get hired, and can make one application to one state in the lower 48 and be hired just like that. Now, we all need to double down to see where the problem is there.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Bishop. Senator Denley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to the attendance issue, how would you correct that issue? How would you fix that?
I apologize to those behind me. I was not going to say this. As a teacher at Clark Middle School, started in 1980, very frustrated with very bright students, in parent conferences, talking with the parents, those that came, and in telephone conferences with those, and in particular some of my brightest students that just didn't come to school. I would ask, why are you not coming to school? And the parents said, it's very frustrating. I wake them up and they just don't come to school. And so I remember talking to my principal, Ray Williams, the man that hired me. I said, wouldn't it be great? We have this permanent dividend fund check for every man, woman, and child. And yet we have folks that are telling me they can't get their kids to come to school. And these kids are bright. I mean, I taught at McLaughlin McLaughlin School. And some of those students that I taught there are the brightest of the bright. And they make 2 and 3 years growth in 1 year. But they too had problems with attendance. They just didn't go to school. And I know the permanent dividend fund is sacrosanct, in a casual conversation with a representative outside the Renoff Hotel, I mentioned this very concept to him. He indicated he would be interested in looking at that. But I apologize again to those. I'm probably, I can feel the daggers in my back. You know, just till I get outside the door. But, you know, there's got to be some accountability on the part of students. You know, we do a lot of talking about accountability of teachers. And by golly, we accept that. We have students that need to be accountable as well because they are contributing to the low overall averages that we have in all the discussions about student performance. So student accountability, frustrating.
Interesting idea. Thank you. Okay. Senator Olson?
Just a comment. One of the things that I've noticed, that at least in the town that I come from, which is a very small school up there in Golovin, is that when they started the school breakfast program, they saw an upsurge in their attendance rate because parents were then motivated to get them up, to get them a meal so that they could go ahead and get their amount of blood sugar that you need to go ahead and be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Some of them work that way, but when it's 20 below outside, it's certainly one of those things that is a positive factor. So just a comment that I have on school attendance. But there are other things that are out there where, you know, schools, kids stay at home for other reasons, lack of sleep, you know, neglect by the parents, a disinterested parent in education because maybe they don't see the value of it. And so those are things that I've seen over my so many years.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Ron, thank you very much for joining us tonight, and I'm sure hopefully you'll be around in the next few days if there's additional questions.
I've got a plane at 7:45 tonight,
okay,
so I can get some clean clothes, and I'll be back.
Have a safe flight. Thank you. Okay, so Norm, are you presenting, or is it SUNY?
Well, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, perhaps our president, Ms. Sunny Hills, could present first.
Oh, Sunny, I'm sorry. Sure. Sunny, are you still online? Sunny is the president of the Association of Alaska School Boards. And also we have here Norm Wooten as well. Sunny, you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. Yes, you know that I'm currently serving as president of ASB, and I'll be brief. I know your time is short and your days are long. and I appreciate that so much, the effort that you're putting in. It'll be very brief. There are many elements to CFHB 278, I'll limit my testimony to one section.
Okay, but I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, we do need your name and affiliation for the record, please.
I'm sorry. Sunny Hills, and I'm the president of the Association of Alaska School Boards.
Great. Thank you. Now proceed, please.
Okay. School board members take seriously our stewardship of public money. The people who elected us, our constituents, put their faith in us to make board policy, hire our administrative leaders, set budgets, and yes, that includes involvement in negotiating salaries. Negotiations are one of the most difficult issues we deal with, but we understand the responsibility we've been given, and we attempt to keep our costs down and still affirm the importance of our teachers, support staff, and administrators. And as president of AASB, I too have faith in these elected bodies, our school boards. You've been hearing our pleas for additional funding inside the foundation formula due to increasing costs. Salaries are a part of those increases, along with supplies, transportation, utilities, and services. Districts all across the state have negotiated responsibly with our employees to bring in contracts with lower CLAs than ever before. We and our staff recognize the looming state deficit, and we want to be part of its solution. But right now, increasing costs are requiring us to eliminate programs that we need to ensure student success. So I urge you to give consideration to increasing operational funding inside the formula so that we can provide our students with a truly great education. And I thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for your work on behalf of Alaska students.
Great. Thank you for that testimony, Sunny. Now, did you or maybe Mr. Wooten here have comments on the bill specifically? Maybe areas you don't like to see changed or things maybe missing? Okay.
Yes, Norm will speak with that with a great deal of knowledge.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you very much for your initial testimony and introduction. So we'll go now to Mr. Wooten, who's here with us. Mr. Wooten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Norm Wooten. I'm the Director of School Improvement and Governmental Relations for the Association of Alaska School Boards. AASB represents all 53 school districts across the state. Our school boards are made up of elected officials statutorily charged with governance oversight of these school districts. Each year, our members coalesce around positions that affect students attending our schools. I'm going to quickly walk through. You folks have had a long day, so I'll be as brief as possible. The sections of House Bill 278 on which our members have taken a position. In Section 2, testing out of courses, Alaska's education system is a standards-based system that emphasizes content mastery rather than seat time. We support students being able to challenge a course and to receive credit after demonstrating mastery. Section 8, the school rating system. It seems to make sense to us to stay with the star system rather than changing to a letter grade. Teachers all across the state are working very hard to increase student achievement. The star system implemented by the department as a requirement of the NCLB waiver seems to be adequate to let communities know how their schools measure up in relation to other schools. Section 9 deals with the process for an appeal for denial of a charter application. Our members across the state support charter schools as an option. As part of the school district, under the governance of a local school board. However, we do not support an appeal of the denial of a charter that goes outside the authority of the local school board. We believe these schools are local schools and should be under the authority totally of a local school district. Sections 11, 12, and 13, this deals with charter schools being able to have the right of first refusal to lease district space, the indirect rates, and the startup grants for charter schools. Again, our members support charter schools and agree with efforts that would make them more successful. In particular,
facilities are probably the greatest challenge that our charter schools face. And we believe that this would help alleviate that challenge somewhat. The startup grant, obviously, would ease up some of those initial startup strains that make charter schools so difficult to begin. But once again, we support these efforts to make these charter schools successful. Section 16 is that section of the bill that deals with the requirement for the State Board of Education and the department to look at ways and to report to the legislature about ways that schools could be improved. Our membership has always supported any effort to improve schools and to create efficiencies. We have that in common with you folks. We want to make our schools better. We want to make them more efficient, and we would welcome the opportunity as an association to be a part of that effort with the department. Section 17, charter school pupil transportation. We reiterate our support of charter schools and believe that the provisions for pupil transportation just make good sense. Interestingly, we find ourselves at odds with the National School Board Association over charter schools. Among them, and they, I don't think they understand the choices that exist in our state about options for students to be educated within the public school system with things like charter schools and correspondence and all these various options that we have. We believe in Alaska of offering as many choices as possible for students that will enhance their learning style. Alaska finds itself out of sync with most of our outside colleagues, but we believe it's the right thing to do for the kids within our system. Section 18 and 19. These are sections that include Mount Edgecombe, a residential school, and being able to for students to challenge those courses, as well as the annual application period for new residential schools. Among the choices we support are residential boarding schools, and we want them to be successful. Section 20, 21, and 22 deal with the increase to the base student allocation. We are very appreciative of the increase in the base student allocation inside the foundation formula. We're also grateful for a three-year increase, as is indicated in these sections, to enable us to better plan for the coming years. However, the amounts still do not adequately meet the budget shortfalls that exist in districts all across the state. Section 23 and 24 deal with the increasing the time to acquire acquisition of tenure to 5 years. Smaller communities remain at 3 years. You've had that discussions. And all I'll say about that is our members have a resolution that supports the increase in time to acquire tenure. Section 26 deals with the ability of high school students to be able to earn dual credits through these TVEP courses, these vocational education courses. We strongly support dual credit for CTE courses as well as for all other academic courses. Students should be able to advance as quickly as they can, as well as being challenged with the most rigorous courses that we can possibly offer them. We believe students rise to whatever standard that we place out there for them. Section 29. This deals with municipal tax exemptions for rental property being used by charter schools. Charter schools need assistance. I spoke about the difficulty they have with facilities. They need assistance in meeting those facility needs. This is just one more way that this could happen through a property tax exemption. And then in sections 30 through 40, deal with tax credits. AASB is not specifically opposed to tax credits. However, we are opposed to the use of public money to support private schools.
In Section 48 is a one-time grant to districts. It's money outside the BSA of $30 million, and we are very appreciative of that one-time grant. And that will be a great help to us. And let me just wrap up here by saying AASB recognizes the additional support provided by the legislature through TERS, PERS on behalf payments, through major maintenance, through bond debt reimbursement, through categorical funding that you have supplied each year. We recognize those, and we certainly don't want to close this testimony without offering our appreciation for the support that education has received. We also want to recognize the proposal by the Senate to fund schools to the tune of $100 million over the next 2 years. We appreciate that. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to share the Association of Alaska School Boards position on HB 278, and I'm certainly available to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Norm. Any
questions
from the committee?
Senator Dunleavy? Thank you, Chair. I appreciate Norm's Norm's presentation on behalf of the ASB, and I've known Norm for some time. It's just a clarification, and I'm sure I'm going to have to do this probably between now and next week 50 different times, and I know it's not done on it's not done on purpose or in malice. A tax credit concept, it's not public money. I'm just going to have to keep going over that. Tax credit never touches the public treasury, and tax credit concepts along the lines of what we were talking about have been found to be constitutional throughout the country. It's a different issue than, quote, public money that's in the coffers going out as a voucher. It's a whole different program, whole different idea. So tax credits never touch the public coffer, therefore they're never public. It's never public money. I know some folks want to believe it's public money, but the courts have basically ruled that it's not the case. I just want to get that on the record. Thanks. And I appreciate your presentation, Norm.
Okay. Additional questions, comments for Norm? Mr. Wooten? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Appreciate you staying with us here. Okay, so that was all the invited public testimony. I think we've had quite a few questions already asked and answered. At this point in time, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to at least take the public testimony from the folks here in Juneau on the smoking bill, because some of you have been here since early this morning. The folks online, my apologies, but please call back in the morning. The plan is to take up the smoking bill first thing in the morning at 10 o'clock.
Is that correct?
Yeah. So we'll do the smoking bill first thing tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock. But if you've signed up, you're here in Juneau, we'll take your testimony tonight. I know some of you either flew in or you've spent all day here. But before we go there,
can I have your news?
Brief at ease. Okay, we're back. So at this point in time, I'd like to hear a report from, I know Senator Dunleavy's, Senator Faircloth been working over the interim on various education-related subjects that I think are very germane to the bill itself before us. And so before we leave the education subject for tonight, Senator Faircloth and you and Senator Dunley, I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Mr. Chairman, as I believe that the I know that the Finance Committee let a contract with the Hay Group to talk about insurance pooling and start investigating how we might look at controlling costs in school districts across our state. Senator Dunleavy, I'll release those reports in just a moment. Would you like to make a couple of comments before I do that?
I won't take much time. I just want to also add that Senator Kelly was part of this process all summer long into the fall, too, as part of an expanded Senate Finance Subcommittee on Education. No, I'm looking forward to the release reports and the information. As we mentioned earlier last year when the bill was introduced, SB 90, that we want to do good public policy. We want to turn over every stone. We want to get every answer, because as we go down this road and we expand our discussions to include a broad array of educational issues, we, in my opinion, we don't want to proceed and put anything in the policy that's not going to work for Alaska and Alaskans. So I appreciate your help on this, Senator Faircloth, through your office. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Faircloth, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, so the documents that we're about to release will be located on BASIS in association with SB 90. So if those in the audience or those listening want to take a look at those documents, it'll be there. And then I believe we're going to try to have that posted. That's where the documents will be. Okay. The report dated January 24th, 2014. February 21st, 2014, February 28th, 2014, March 20th, 2014, February 10th, 2014 is issues regarding the superintendent's webinar. Just to let the committee know that the Hay Group contracts, please go ahead and distribute those, Myrna. The Hay Group's contract has been extended to June 30th, 2014, and we intend to continue the discussion and work on addressing the rising costs of health care for school districts across Alaska. There is cost savings to be had, but there are some concerns with school districts, and we're committed to working those concerns out before we implement any changes in this legislative session.
Okay, thank you. Senator Faircloth, and I believe everyone's has the report or is getting the report. Actually, I think I was involved in this process too, wasn't I? Okay. So Senator Dunleavy and myself, Senator Kelly and Senator Faircloth, yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Actually, Senator Gardner and Senator Stevens, too, participated, as well as an extended group that drafted the original RFP to start acquiring the information. So it's a group effort, including all the school districts who participated. We're so grateful that they all took the time, with the help of our co-chairs, actually, to encourage the participation. So we know a little bit better where we're at and where the districts are at, and we'll continue to work with them.
Yeah, I believe we heard that 100% participation, which is great. That's the best way to gather data, is to have everyone participate. So, okay. Well, Senator Dunleavy, I believe this was all started because of Senate Bill 90 or 100, or which one was it?
Thank you, Chair. I think you were going to say because of you.
I usually do, and you get mad at me. So
no, I don't. I want to thank you for your work throughout the year on these issues, and Senator Faircloth as well, Senator Kelly, Senator Gardner, and Senator Stevens in the Subcommittee of Finance on Education. I'm going to reserve my comments, broadly speaking, for tomorrow, because we're going to be coming back to education. But I just want to leave folks with a thought. The legislature is mandated by the Constitution to establish, which we've done, but maintain a system of public schools. And for the longest times, and it's ebbed and flowed, and it's been somewhat cyclical over the past 50 years, there's been some legislators that have been heavily involved, hands-on, and there's been other legislatures that have not throughout the history of Alaska. The writing of the foundation formula, for example, back in 97, with the help of Senator Wilkins and others, as well as my staff, Sheila Peterson, was an example of where there was some heavy lifting, heavy investment. We're at a point, and I'm going to wrap it up here, but we're at a point, I think, in the history of Alaska, given our revenue projections going out in the future, and where our main commodity that produces revenue is oil is at. The long story short is we are going to, we have to become more actively involved in untangling the education system that's been developed over the past 50 years. In doing so, with the idea that we wanted to be able to make it sustainable and also maintain maintain and improve the quality of education that's delivered. To do so is going to take some time. It's not going to be done in the next 7 days. It's probably not going to be done in a year. But I would ask this legislature and future legislatures starting next year to really dig into the ins and outs of construction and health care and salaries, benefits, et cetera, so that we can get a we can make sure we have in place a system for the next 50 years that works well for Alaska. So I'll leave it with that and turn it back over to you.
Great. Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, besides appreciation for the chairman of the subcommittee, Senator Dunleavy, and the co-chairs who participated, as well as the other participants, I would like to do a shout-out to Suzanne Armstrong, who negotiated the original contract, working with the RFP to let that and bring that. Again, your office transferred that responsibility then at the beginning of this year over to my office and more under the structure of the LBNA committee. Laura Pierre was the original person, I believe, involved in that, and Aaron Schein took that up at the beginning of this year. And we worked closely with Senator Dunleavy's office and Sheila Peterson. So a shout out to those very qualified staff who worked a lot of hours in trying to make sure that we had documents that were good for the people of Alaska to use, as well as the school district management and the administration of the state of Alaska to review those health care cost drivers for our state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Senator Fairclough, and everyone's efforts on this. Where do we go from here on this subject? Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, we have plans this summer to continue the conversation. That's why I indicated that the contract has been extended to June 30th of this year so that we can continue down the path. There is cost savings to be had, but there are contracts in place with a staged exit for those contracts, and there are some other issues that are being done in other states to try to control costs that we may be evaluating and looking at. Right now, we're trying to acquire all the data associated with the survey so that we can take it apart and take a look at that data ourselves. But again, we certainly want to honor collective bargaining agreements that are out there and expectations of the members of those contracts that are receiving those benefits. But what Senator Dunleavy's office tasked me with is just because you can find cost savings doesn't mean it's good for everybody. And so we need to make sure that we know the ramifications. As an example, I believe in the Fairbanks area, there was a concern that the borough would be somehow disadvantaged if we took their school districts and incorporated those into a larger pool without consideration for the impacts on the district. That's just one example of unintended consequences that Senator Dunleavy has been very cognizant of, and making sure that we do in addition to saving money for the people of Alaska, actually having those benefits roll out so that there's not unintended consequences in the local community. So we're continuing to explore that. We may be back to this committee in a future year asking for a new contract with a new contractor or extending this contract. But right now we have latitude to go forward this summer for a while to continue the look at insurance pooling.
Through the chair, just briefly, so with that, the advancement of SB 90 won't take place this year because we are running out of time, but the concept will survive through the summer, and if there are certain individuals here next year, they will continue to pursue this. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you for continuing the pursuit. It's too big of a topic to not pursue. Okay, so I think, as I said, rather than stopping for a dinner break and then trying to come back, let's continue on here for a little bit longer, at least to take the testimony from the folks here in Juneau that have signed up to testify on the next bill before Senate Bill 209. Senator Michiki was here. Did he leave? He's in my office. Well, that's a heck of a place to be. I'm trying to remember. I think we had his introduction, and we had questions, and so we were ready to go to public testimony. I was going to give Senator Machicki an opportunity if he wanted to add something before we started. But we'll get him back. So let's go to
public. Chairman,
yeah.
He's taking a smoke break.
let's hope he's not Dr. Olson. Okay, let's start then. It looks like there's four folks here. Is it Bob? Bob Ureta? Oh, a doctor. Yeah, MD. Okay, sorry. You're a doctor. I can't read your writing.
did you want the senator?
No, I think we're good. I think we got the orientation from. We asked him questions, and we're going to work through the public testimony now, and then we'll certainly bring Senator Machicki back up for additional questions and thoughts as we go through the public testimony process. We always pick up bits and pieces that we didn't initially pick up with the introduction of the bill. So, Doctor, the floor is yours. If you could, please put your name on the record and then proceed with your testimony.
My name is Bob Ureta. I'm a family physician born and raised in Wrangell, Alaska. I practice family medicine in Juneau since 1984, and I was a member of the third WAMI class that started in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm an American Heart Association volunteer for the past 14 years, and I'm here to speak in support of this bill. I support the inclusion of e-cigarettes and hope that the opt-out provision will be removed, with all due respect. My reasons for supporting this bill is that every 34 seconds, an American dies of a heart attack. Every 40 seconds, an American dies of stroke. Cancer and cardiovascular disease are the number one and number two causes of death of all Alaskans. Secondhand smoke kills about 50,000 Americans a year. The CDC reports secondhand smoke exposure costs Americans $5.6 billion a year in lost productivity. Tobacco costs the U.S. $133 billion in direct medical care for adults and $156 billion in lost productivity. It is expensive. Smoke-free air workplace laws are an important part in improving the health of this country and our state. Clean air reduces heart attacks, stroke, cancer, and lung disease. An example, in Pueblo, Colorado, for a year and a half before and a year and a half after their Clean Air Act went into effect, they found a 20% increase in combined bar and restaurant sales tax from increased sales. And at the same time period, they found 27% decrease in heart attacks. This is an immediate benefit with a decrease in heart attacks. See the ICER report on Anchorage's a positive business experience when their Clean Air Act went into effect. A word on electronic cigarettes. I believe they should be included due to serious questions about their safety. The FDA has found known toxins and nicotine, despite what some of the manufacturers have said. Their definitive word may come soon. And my approach to this is, first, do no harm. Can you imagine how many lives would be saved if cigarettes had been studied properly before being placed on the market? I think the same thing goes here. Now, the positive impacts will benefit many in a short period of time, and on behalf of the American Heart Association, I urge you to support this bill, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor. Don't see any questions. Thank you for being with us tonight. Okay. All right. Let's see. Michael Patterson. So, Michael, welcome to Senate Finance. I think we all know you. You're a TV star. Is that correct?
Yes.
Go ahead. Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, Michael, if you could please put your name on the record for us and your affiliation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. My name is Michael Patterson. I was chosen by CDC to do a nationwide campaign on COPD. Because there isn't a lot known about it, and because Alaska Natives are dying at twice the rate of any other nationality in the United States, as well as the American Indians. Well, my doctor basically told me that if I was lucky, I might live 5 years. I mean, it really changed a lot of things for me. I used to be one of those smokers out there that was objecting to people like you infringing on my rights. I don't feel that way anymore. When CDC chose me to do this, they gave me a mission in life. They gave me something to do with what little life I have left. And so I'm using the time that I have to travel around Alaska and speak in the schools. The Juno Empire wrote a story about me some time ago when they said that I attack this anti-smoking campaign with the fever of an evangelist. And I do. When I go into the schools, I pour out my heart and soul on the altar of their lives, because I know that I'm either speaking life or death to them. I remember when people came to my school and talked to me and they showed me pictures of black lungs and they told me what the statistics were. And they talked to me from their head and they didn't touch my life. And I don't want to make that mistake when I go out there. But you know, after I was diagnosed with COPD and told this is the end of my life, you know, I found out how hard it is to avoid secondhand smoke. And it was then that I realized how many people I had assaulted without any care about what was happening to them. It was only about my rights. Today we're living with e-cigarettes, and people are saying that there's inconclusive evidence, but that's not true. FDA may have not done a thorough examination of this, but Center for Disease Control has. And they have established that it is, in fact, not vapor, harmless water vapor, but that it is aerosol. And that it contains carcinogens that are known to cause cancer. And it also contains ultrafine particles that will cause your blood veins to constrict. If you have heart problems, it will cause you to have a heart attack. It also causes exacerbation attacks in people with asthma, emphysema, and COPD. I'd quickly like to say that I experience extreme exacerbation attacks. Tobacco can set it up. The things that you find in e-cigarettes can set it up. And what that is the last time I had an exacerbation attack, I was in emergency for 4 hours, suffocating, because I had air trapped in my lungs and I couldn't get it out, and all I could do was take tiny gulps of air on top of that. And it was like every cell in my body was screaming that I was suffocating to death. And the terror level of that was so intense, it made me a non-smoker. But that wasn't the end of it. After 4 hours, I spent 9 days in the hospital, every 4 hours getting injected with prednisone steroids. So much so that I did not get to sleep for 10 days. And I can't tell you what that feels like in a way that you might be able to understand it, but sleep deprivation is an agonizing thing. And so when I go into the schools, I talk to those kids and tell them, don't think like I did. Don't think that nothing's going to happen until you're an old person ready to die, so it doesn't matter, because I'm definitely not old and I'm definitely not ready to die. I'm terrorized by e-cigarettes because I know they're deadly. And if somebody was just use one in this room right now, I couldn't tell unless I saw you do it. And if I didn't see you do it, and I'm breathing that may cost me my life. If somebody lights up a cigarette in this room, I'm going to smell it instantly and I can run. I can avoid that. I cannot avoid e-cigarettes. And all I'm asking you to do is help me in this mission. Help me take as much time that I have left and use it to speak life to your children, to make them understand what the cost of this really is. You know, I don't just speak to them about the dangers of cigarettes. I also share with them the need to break the code of silence. That's a whole other issue, but it ties into it. And I challenge them to greatness. I challenge them not to sit around bored and wait for somebody to bring their life to them, but to stand up and go out there and do an investigation of their own, because there's so many miracles and wonders in life, you'll never live long enough to find all of them. And it wasn't until I'm faced with my own death that I understand what life is like and how much of it I walked through with my eyes closed. And so I'm just asking you guys to help me get a little bit more time to do what is the passion in my heart. You know, a lot of people when they're faced with issues like this will decide that maybe they want to stay drunk so they don't have to face it. Or maybe they want to take everything they can from life because life owes them everything and never gave them anything, and I don't feel that way. Whenever I'm faced with my own death, I don't look at my grandson and my granddaughter that I love more than anything, and I don't look at my own daughter. I look forward to the people that I'm not going to be able to touch, that I'm not going to be able to help, the ones that I'm not going to be able to speak this message from the depth of my own heart and my soul, and try to bring people to a point where they don't ever have to find out what this feels like. And I'm asking you to be a part of that. I'm asking you to really consider this bill and not think about the ramifications of the dollars in some business owner's pocket. Because a lot of these people out there that are smoking and complaining about us infringing on their rights, they wouldn't want their own children to smoke. And I'm the guy that's going in the schools and trying to do something about that. But I really appreciate you guys giving me the time and listening to me and considering what I bring before you. This is a matter of life and death. And I'm asking you to really consider the ramifications of all of this. And I thank you for being here and doing what you do.
Great. Well, Michael, we really appreciate you coming out tonight and staying with us all day today. you have a powerful testimony there. And well, that's why we're hearing the bill. We agree with you. It has a lot of merits. So. Again, thank you for joining us tonight. Any questions for Michael? Okay, thank you much. Okay, let's continue here now to, is it Lincoln? Lincoln Bean. Looks like Lincoln, you're with the Alaska Native Health Board, is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I serve on the Alaska Native Health Board. My name is Lincoln Bean, Sr. I'm from CAKE, and I am a tribally elected member from CAKE, OVK. I serve on the SEARCH Board of Directors, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, and this board elected me to serve on ANTHC, Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, as well as the JOB, the Hospital Governing Board. And I agree with all that's been said here today. I can't say that any more eloquent than he can. But I also serve on the National Indian Health Board. Last week when I was in Montana, the glaring report that Alaska has the highest cancer rate in the nation. When I heard that from out of state, it should get your undivided attention to our family members, our grandchildren, our children, our brothers and sisters and aunties, everybody. That when I'm involved with hospitals, I remember one oncologist when we took over ANTHC in a hospital. Now we have to have four. The statistics don't lie. This program you're offering that's here, Senate Bill 209, Alaska Native Health Board strongly supports this bill, 209. We have implemented a similar policy and it's seen a positive impact. Cancer is highest among Alaska Natives, largely due to tobacco. And prevention is the key. Just this week, we held a meeting here, Alaska Native Health Board here this week, and they parted ways focusing on prevention. And it's not all grim. There is good news. I have to take my own glasses off to read my writing, even if I'm not a doctor. There's good news. Less than one out in five, 18% of Alaska Native youth smoke today. Compared with 1 in 3, 31% 5 years ago in 2007. However, non-smokers can be sickened by secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke to me is, I see these businesses that went smoke-free, and I see them flourishing and see more people going to wherever it is that's smoke-free. I think it helps the business from what I see, and I support that I can take my granddaughter to a place that's smoke-free. I can go there and enjoy dinner or whatever. But thank you for your time, and it was worth it waiting all day just to say these few things to you, because what we have to say may save someone's life. It may be yours, it may be somebody, a friend, but thank you for the time, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you.
Katwahan, you get away. What you're doing is right. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Bean. Okay. Emily. And Emily is the last one tonight, at least here in Juneau. As I said, tomorrow morning we will go to the LIOs and off-nets, and then whoever else is here in Juneau who wants to testify tomorrow. Okay, Emily, the floor is yours.
Good evening, Chairman Meyer and members of the committee. My name is Emily Neenan. I'm the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. I do not yet hold elder status, so I will keep my comments brief.
Thank you.
In the interest of time tonight, I'm very pleased to be here in support of Senator Michicki's work with what he aptly referred to as the Take It Outside bill. I've been working on this issue in Alaska for 13 years now in local areas, and Senator Michicki explained some of the barriers that we have to further local action. It is time to protect all workers from secondhand smoke in the workplace. As such, it should come as no surprise that the American Cancer Society does support protecting all workers. So we don't support the opt-out provision, but we do support the continued public discourse in moving this bill forward, and appreciate your time tonight. Want to highlight one thing that since you're the Finance Committee, there was a study done that the American Cancer Society commissioned, looking at every state what would happen if you implemented such a law. Over 5 years, a comprehensive smoke-free law would be expected to produce the following economic benefits: heart attack and stroke treatment savings, $3.69 million. Lung cancer treatment savings, $1.35 million. The state's Medicaid program savings, $520,000. Smoking-related pregnancy treatment savings, $980,000. So I just want to get that on the record for the Finance Committee's consideration. You've already heard some information about electronic cigarettes. That's new since we dealt with this issue in Anchorage a few years ago. Since worked with Senator Fairclough on this issue for many years. But those are a relatively new product on the market. I want to also highlight that we've been working closely with the Department of Health and Social Services on implementation plans, and that has gone very smoothly for the department to be able to implement this with the existing community grant program around the state, focused on public education, because that's what we've seen works in local communities in Alaska and across the nation. So with that, I'll close with everyone has the right to breathe smoke-free air. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Emily, I have a couple questions. I know all the bills that go through the committee process get modified usually in some fashion, and I believe this bill probably has as well. Is there items in here that you don't particularly like? I think you mentioned the opt-out.
I will summarize by saying that, of course, the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network supports protecting all workers from secondhand smoke in the workplace. We have been following this, and there have been some changes along the way. We're confident in the legislative process to continue to deal with these issues.
Okay. And then how many, I know we worked together in Anchorage, smoke-free, Juneau, obviously, I think Bethel is actually the first one. What other cities or communities in statewide have gone smoke-free?
So Bethel was the first in 1998. We've got Barrow, Nome, I'm going from the top down here, Barrow, Nome, Dillingham, Unalaska, Anchorage, Juneau, Palmer, Haines, Skagway, Petersburg, Kluwak. I think that's about half the population.
I think we have the sheet here. I'm sorry.
It's in the sponsor statement.
Yeah, my fault. I've just been...
Yes, it's about half the population of the state is covered currently.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I'm just kind of getting up on this bill. We had some big bills on the floor today that have taken my attention. Okay. Other questions for Emily? Okay. Seeing none, we'll be spending more time on this. Emily, thank you very much for your testimony. So I think we will conclude our business for tonight. We'll take this back up tomorrow morning, as well as what else? I got it here. PERS and TERS, I think we'll not take up at least in the morning. Is that correct, Senator Kelly? But we'll take up smoking. There's a Senate Bill 141, National Guard ID vehicle fees, a couple of House bills. So we'll see how far we get tomorrow morning. Again, at 10 o'clock, and I think probably break for lunch, and then four sessions at 1, and after four session, is there a conference committee tomorrow? I think so, because we didn't have it today. So, that, and I believe that's at 4 o'clock. Okay. All right. We'll see. What?
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if you're going to bring us back in after floor session, back into finance, if you know.
I think perhaps, yes. if we go day by day, it depends on how long the floor session goes. If floor session was then at 3 o'clock, we'd probably come back for a while, finish up whatever we don't get done tomorrow. The bills are stacking up in committee, so if we can spare the time, it'd be good. We may even need to work Sunday afternoon late so that everybody can go to Palm Sunday, yeah. It's not Easter yet. But it would be after 2 o'clock, certainly. So we'll just... this is our last weekend before adjournment. We won't be having any committee meetings next weekend, I can assure you. So, okay, anything? If not, thank you. We're adjourned.